From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Dale Thronberry.
And good morning, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio. We're very excited to have you here this morning. We've got two, I think, pretty provocative topics to talk about, and we want you to give us a call. So I'm going to give you that number right now. Write it down. And it is 877-573-7825, 877-573-7825. We're going to be talking with our guest today about what came out of the Pentagon report about the sexual assaults in the military, and I think that that's really a very important subject, and we're going to be talking with a writer for the New York Times on that one. And then at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking about...
We got the New York Times.
I got the New York Times. It's taken 10
But you know, Gary
years.
Gary would have I know. He had a bumper sticker, folks.
I guess I'll hang up.
farther left. Anyway, no, we're not going to do that. Hey, I'm right there. I read the New York Times. I want everybody to know that.
And that magic voice right there is my partner and co-founder of Veterans Radio, Bob Gould, 101st Airborne.
Hello.
Good morning, Robert.
Hello.
How are you doing?
You don't have a proper name. You're just plain Dale.
I'm just Dale. Well, you know, my mother would throw the whole thing out there, but that's only one.
What's your middle name?
Edward.
Oh, so you'd get the Dale Edward. That meant come here.
Yes.
Yes.
Right now.
That was serious.
That's true. And running our board for us today is Nina. Good morning, Nina, and thank you very much for everything that you do for us.
Good morning, Dale. Good morning, Bob. Very happy to be here.
That's right. So if anything goes wrong, we blame her. that's not too much pressure. But anyway, we are excited about today's program. It's these are two very, very important topics. I don't think I even got to the second one yet. And that is the idea of freedom of expression, religious expression, or proselytizing. And there are many in the military that feel that what is the role of religion and how do you share that information and what is that fine line between talking about your religion and trying to convince somebody to convert?
Well, and it's going to be interesting how our guests approach this and what would be some solutions. But one thing that I've always kept, something that was mentioned to me in school way back when, you can't legislate morality. You just can't.
No.
Something has to, no, I wouldn't want somebody chirping on me or feeling the pressure. And when it does, I mean, it happens in civilian life too. But based on that, you just can't say, well, you can't say this unless you had specific words that you couldn't use.
Right.
But then again, you have that other part that you and I were talking about at breakfast, where aren't you coming to the meeting, Dale?
Yes.
No, I'm going to sit here and write a letter home. Well.
And, what is that? The conflict of interest there's the whole thing got started evidently, and I'm sure we'll get the history of this. We're talking with a representative of the Military Chaplains Association, so we're going right to the source here to find out what they feel are the rules and regulations, and that'll be coming up in the second half of the program. But right now I want to talk about an event that's coming up, and I'm going to bring on our line, and this is Wayne Hardwick. And Wayne, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Good morning, Dale.
I brought Wayne on because I got a flyer this week about an All-Nations Veterans Council Teaching Our Traditions powwow that's coming up next weekend, May 18th and 19th, locally here in Brighton, Michigan. Wayne, tell us what that's all about.
A powwow is a social gathering where sacred things happen, our spiritual things happen. All Nations is hosting this powwow. It's our sixth year. Out at Brighton, all proceeds goes to help needy vets. We have Native American dancing, food. We've got probably 25 vendors out there that'll be selling traditional Native crafts. We grand entries at 1 o'clock on Saturday and 6 and noon on Sunday.
Describe this grand entry. I have seen a local powwow here in Ann Arbor, and it's very, very impressive.
It's similar, but not if you're talking about the one at Chrysler. There's no way to compete at Chrysler. It's just phenomenal watching all those dancers. It's the same thing at a smaller scale, but we're outdoors. Mm-hmm. Grand entries led by our head veteran, and then the well, all nations usually does the Ann Arbor powwow. The color guard would be consisting of the United States and Canadian flag, all military branches, plus the POW flag. They'd be followed in then by any royalty, head male and female, and then the lineup of all the other dancers, depending on what style of dance they do.
I have a question for you, because you know, Michigan is home to many tribes, or was home to many tribes, unfortunately. I use the word was. But who are they going to be the main participants in this?
All tribes are going to be out there, but probably, although the rest of them are going to get me, I'd say Ojibwe and Potawatomi, but we'll have Cherokee. I've got friends coming in from Bloomington, Illinois, that are Lakota, and that... there'll be all different tribes and all different styles of dance.
This sounds like a great opportunity. And the idea here is, you said that it's All Nations Veterans Council. What is it that you're hoping to achieve with the funds that you raise?
With our group, we have certain criteria on who we help first. First, of course, would be any deployed veterans and their families, and then we just go down any veteran. And then just if we got money, anybody in the community. We put out over 100 food baskets during the holiday season just to who's ever in need. But our main goal is to help the needy vets.
Okay, so let's one more time. And where is this and when is it?
It's May 18th and 19th, Saturday and Sunday, at Bishop's State Park in Brighton. The address is kind of funny. It's 6360 Chilson Road in Howell. But if you go on MapQuest, that's going to take you down 96. And anybody coming from Ann Arbor, just take 23 North, get up at exit 57, and follow the signs.
And what kind of Wayne? This is Bob Gould. What kind of food will be available there?
It'll be true. I've got two different food vendors. Indian tacos, fried bread, wild rice soup, buffalo burgers, corn dogs. They have a whole variety on their menu, and that. And plus, we have a feast in between the two dances on Saturday where we supply food for anybody that comes, but that's just hot dogs, smoked sausage, and the women in our group put out their best salad, so we feed about 200 there.
And that's going to be next Saturday, correct?
Next Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, that sounds great. In fact, I believe, Dale, isn't that Veterans... Is it Appreciation Day? What was next, the 18th? Veterans something. Veterans.
I'm going to
find out.
I'm drawing a blank. Thank you very much. We're going to use our technological skills to find that out.
I will find out within moments. Thank you,
Wayne. As we go along that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, reminding people to head on out to the Brighton Recreation Area in Brighton, Michigan, Bishop Lake, for the All Nations Veterans Council Teaching Our Traditions Powwow next Saturday and Sunday, May 18th and 19th. There is a little cost here. 12 years and up is $5. Seniors, that's me, and children, $3, and children under 5 are free. You may also have to purchase a park pass if you don't have one currently. So head on out to Bishop Lake next Saturday for the Veterans Council and the powwow. I think it looks like a great opportunity and a great thing to help.
Oh, those are fun.
Thank you very much, Wayne.
Great fun.
Thank you. All right, I guess he's already gone. And so we're going to be taking a break, and then we'll be coming back in just a moment. We'll be going to be talking about the latest report that came out from the Pentagon and DOD about the amazing increase in number of sexual assaults, and how are they dealing with that, and what do you think? Give us a call, 877-573-7825. We'll be right back after this message.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
So you can see.
Yeah, what in the world is going on out there? And that was our good friend Marvin Gaye from our vast collection of 60s music, which is all we have, I think. But anyway, we were here back here on Veterans Radio, and we've got a couple of guests that I want to introduce to you. Number one, excuse me as I reach over and
you got the, yeah.
punch the button. I got to move the phone closer.
You have
closer.
To move over. I know.
Anyhow, the reason for this story that got my attention is that according to new numbers released by the Department of Defense, there were 26,000 cases of military sexual assault in 2012. That's a 34.5% increase from 2011. The number of victims believed not to be reporting their attacks skyrocketed to 92%. Beyond the raw sexual assault statistics, the military system of justice is also under great scrutiny for how it deals with cases. Current regulations allow commanding officers to reverse criminal convictions, which critics argue present enormous potential conflict of interest. Joining me on my line, first of all, is our good friend, Colonel Christine Cook, who is on the road. Colonel, good morning.
Good. How are you?
I am terrific, and I asked you to come on because you are familiar with this conflict of interest thing, because we talked a little bit about this the other day. Without revealing names or sources, I guess we have to say, I remember I was going to change your voice, that's right. can you tell me, you know, how serious is this problem?
Well, I mean, I'm not an expert as to how serious the problem is, but I do know that there's anecdotal evidence about it happening and it getting kind of swept under the rug for a variety of reasons.
Well, the other person that I have on the line with us is Jennifer Steinhauer, and Jennifer is a reporter, the congressional reporter for the New York Times. And the reason that, Jennifer, I want to welcome you to Veterans Radio.
Thank you.
The reason I asked Jennifer to come on is that I read an article earlier in the week that she had written called Military Courts Are Called Outdated on Sex Crimes. And I was wondering, Jennifer, if you could just talk to us a little bit about what you learned as far as military courts were concerned.
Well, it's very interesting. You were citing some data about a Pentagon report about how many people have reported and had sexual assault cases adjudicated. And based on an anonymous survey the Pentagon released last week, they estimate that 26,000 people in the armed forces were sexually assaulted while serving last year. So it's a very large problem, actually, according to the Pentagon's own estimates. And as a lot of your listeners probably know, the way that serious crimes are adjudicated in the military is different than in the civilian system. They have their own way of doing that through something that's called convening authority, which is, in this case, the commander who has who's senior to the person who is accused of the crime. They serve in the role of prosecutor in deciding whether or not to bring the case. They choose the jury. They oversee the adjudication of it, and they also have the authority to, once the jury has made a decision, decide whether or not to implement the punishment, or in some cases, doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it's quite high profile, to overturn the jury findings, sometimes based on evidence that was not heard by the jury, which is something that, you know, does not happen in the civilian court system. So it's a very different way. It's a justice system that stems actually from British law that is about 200 years old that that England has stopped using. Most of our allies, in fact, use a different system at this point for prosecuting these types of crimes.
In your article, this is from May 8th from the New York Times, it's called Military Courts Called Outdated on Sex Crimes. You mentioned that this history, it says we have a system based partly on the 20th century and partly on the 18th century, where victims and their advocates say that such a process serves as a disincentive. for reporting sexual assault because victims fear and often experience retribution for their peers and superiors are not giving due process, as you just mentioned. I'm not sure. I'm getting a little feedback here, but we'll just keep on going. Christine, as a commanding officer, can you tell us a little bit about how you interpret what the military law is?
Well, I know that as a battalion commander, when a sexual harassment case came up, it would go well beyond echelons above me, and they were partially doing that in an effort to try to get more objective about it. So therefore, the chain of command would help with getting sworn statements. They had a sexual harassment advisor, so to speak, for giving the victim someone who would be able to talk. They would be able to talk to without retribution, someone who was not in the chain of command but was counseling the chain of command about the case. I do know that one of the things that would happen in my case, I had somebody who had an attempted rape. I got 15 different sworn statements about it. I was willing to go forward and deal with this, but she determined that she did not want to press charges. In spite of my saying, you know, look, we don't have tolerance for this kind of thing, I want to go forward with it. She did not want to go forward with it. And so I had to honor her wishes for that, realizing that, you know, that meant that this guy was free to do it again.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer, some of the articles that were coming out was that a particular Air Force lieutenant colonel who had evidently just gone through sexual awareness training decided that he felt it was okay for him to go out and grope someone. Can you comment on that?
Well, I can't comment on his motivations, but he was more than he had been through the training. He was had some jurisdiction actually over a program in the Air Force, so that was pretty embarrassing for that branch, especially since they happened to be sitting before a congressional Senate committee the next day to talk about budget issues. This did come up, and in fact, the person who overturned the conviction that we were talking about before, by the way, I just wanted to mention, is now having her nomination held up for a position because Claire McCaskill is holding that up. So this has ramifications for some people who are in charge of overturning these convictions that we talked about. In terms of that individual, that was actually charged with the police because I believe it happened in a parking lot of a bar and did not happen on military property. I know that the military was hoping that they could take jurisdiction back over his case, but I think the prosecutors declined that. So that will be a little bit of a different situation, but it certainly was embarrassing for the Air Force.
Can we back up just a minute, Jennifer, and can you give us a little bit of the story of the woman whose nomination, I think it was, wouldn't she be nominated for a general or straighten me out here, I can't remember what it was, but she had overturned a couple of convictions.
I think it was one conviction that we know about, and I have not, I confess, I have not read the file on it. This was brought to the media's attention by Senator Claire McCaskill, mm-hmm. who is a Democrat from Missouri. She learned about it. As I said before, part of the interesting thing about the way that this system works is that the commander in charge of the case can decide to overturn the findings of the jury, and sometimes that can be based on what they would consider to be mitigating factors that the jury didn't hear. Now, that was Air Force Officer Susan Helms, and she was to be Vice Commander of the Air Force Space Command. I believe that Ms. Helms was an astronaut, and so Ms. Claire McCaskill has put a hold on that until she can further investigate her decision to overturn that jury conviction last year. There's not a lot of information beyond that that's available.
Well, according to your article, you're talking about the response of Congress and their holdings in it. And one of the things that we keep seeing here is people saying that they just don't seem to get it. This behavior is for some reason, is acceptable.
I don't know if it's that it's acceptable, but there seems to be an increasing feeling among lawmakers who are very seriously committed to this issue. And I think, you know, there was a meeting this week at the White House with Valerie Jarrett, who's a senior advisor to President Obama, and some other officials in the administration who oversee military affairs, with a variety of senators and members of the House who are working on a sexual assault issue. And a great deal of the content of that meeting apparently focused on the culture of the military and what makes people feel more empowered to commit these crimes, and what about the way the justice system works makes it harder for people to report them, or, as your other guest just explained, which happens very frequently, people report them but then decline to press charges and decline to go forward with it. And, of course, what about the system makes it more difficult for victims to get justice and, in fact, sometimes end up feeling retaliated against and having their career damaged. And the cultural issues of the military, which I can't speak to, are part of a focus, I would say, of these congressional hearings, yes.
I think it's important that we talk about these things, at least get them out there to the public so that we can understand it. We're talking with Jennifer Steinhauer, a congressional reporter for the New York Times, and Colonel Christine Cook, who is a contributor to Veterans Radio. And if you want to get in on the conversation, you can give us a call here at 877-573-7825. Please give us a call. Just remember, we're on the radio, and keep us safe here.
Right. I do have a question for Jennifer. Have you been able to find any studies regarding pornography and the increase of availability of pornography in the service, and the correlation between that and sexual harassment, sexual abuse? Has there been anything on that to show that there's been an increase in pornography in the service?
I don't know, and I have not heard that raised at any of the hearings on this issue that I've attended.
Okay. That question.
I guess that takes care of that.
Christine, what is your the policy on? I don't want to get into that issue too much, but when a crime is reported, and you gave us that example, how do you go about prosecuting it?
Well, we had a JAG, you know, a judge advocate general that was at the, not the brigade level, we actually had it at the Corps level, mm-hmm. and it was a team of about 15 people that were in that judge advocate general slot. So basically, if we had somebody who reported a crime, it would normally go first to the commander of the unit, and then from there, we would, as I said, collect the sworn statements. If the person was willing to go forward, we would have somebody who would act as their advocate. That was within the battalion level. And then that person would help them get the prosecution case going. Because you know, at that point, the command would be considered prosecution, we would try to get a defense lawyer for the person who was on the other side. And since we only had the one time when somebody reported an event and that person decided not to go forward, I'm not really clear on what would happen from there. But it went to much higher levels and was completely outside of the command by the time it was actually tried, from what I could tell.
Colonel Cook, this is Bob Gould. But if this happens as an intra-unit, then while all this is going on, investigation, et cetera, collecting statements, there is the perp or the alleged perp and the victim are still in contact, or has something been done to separate that so that situation, and that could be very intimidating, of course, and has there been something done to alleviate that condition, to where they're not in contact while the investigation is going on?
Whenever there was an issue where there was either, you know, sometimes it was sexual harassment, you know, or assault. In that particular case, I also had some sexual harassment cases, and I always separated victim from the person who was the alleged perpetrator. And I had that ability because I had five different units that all came under me, They were at 9 different locations. So I could pretty easily pull one person and say, okay, you're now attached over here and you're over attached over here. But in a situation where you don't have that option, yeah, there is a problem. And what ends up happening and what ends up sometimes being considered retaliation is when you're trying to move the victim and or the perpetrator so that they are separated and they end up in a slot that they consider is not as good as the slot that they were in originally. And there's not much we can do about that, you know, when we're trying to get into the getting all of the preparation, because it can take months before this goes to trial.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. Nina just sent me a little note. She wanted to ask a question about harassment for other things, such as there's a 82nd Airborne Sergeant Nadia Hossan, who said that Muslim-sounding names drew harassment also. Did you have any experience with that, Christine?
We did not, actually. We had only a few Muslims in our unit, and we were pretty understanding of them. They were, you know, one of them wanted to celebrate Ramadan or observe Ramadan, and you know, we had no problems with that. But then again, if they had been acting suspicious in any way, maybe that would have been a different mm-hmm. scenario.
Well, Jennifer, I'll come back to you on the one last comment, I guess, is that it seems as though in these hearings that are being held, there's an Air Force, let's see, says General Mark Welsh, Chief of Staff of the Air Force, shocked women in the Senate by talking about the hookup mentality of this generation. Did you hear anything about that?
I was there for that hearing. I think that there was some negative reaction to that because there was a suggestion that there was a commingling of the idea of consensual, casual sexual relationships, so-called hookups, and sexual assault, which is obviously a violent crime. And I think it's important also, we've been having a little bit a distinction in this conversation between sexual harassment, which is a problem, unacceptable in any workplace, and sexual assault, which is a criminal matter and a completely different situation that has a completely different legal process. And it seems that to some people, to some senators, that that particular comment may not have been relevant to the question of people being raped and assaulted.
Yeah.
Although I have to say that in military justice systems, they are, for the most part, dealt with in the same way at the command level. Both mm-hmm. sexual harassment and sexual assault are kind of lumped together because they realize that sexual assault could, or sexual harassment could lead to sexual assault.
That's a good point. That's interesting.
Well, I think it is interesting, and we're coming up at the bottom of the hour, and, of course, we're not going to have time to get it any more into this subject. Jennifer, I want to thank you very much for coming on Veterans Radio, and your articles I thought were very informative and enlightening to me and hopefully to our audience. So I encourage them to go to the New York Times and look up the articles by Jennifer Steinhauer on military courts. May 8th is the article, and, of course, you have other great articles there that I've got to read, and I'm hoping that we can have you back on Veterans Radio.
It would be my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Jennifer, very much. And I should hook you up. Well, I shouldn't say hook up here.
Oh, God.
Yeah, what do
That's
I know?
It.
Anyway, Colonel Cook, thank you very much for being on a program. Colonel Cook is doing a program on women in the military on June 8th. So you guys might want to talk after we get off the air to see what we can do. But, Christine, thank you very much, and I hope that your son is doing well in his rowing regatta. And I will be talking to you soon.
Thanks.
Okay. Real quick, before we go to break, I found something in the SHARP program, which is from the Army, and that stands for Sexual Harassment, Assault, Response, and Prevention. SHARP, S-H-A-R-P. You can Google that. Hmm?
All right. Well, we're going to do whatever we can to make sure that these sexual assaults and the sexual harassment stop. And we didn't get into the topic, and maybe Christine will on her program, but the idea of people having control, just like in the civilian world. We got to go to a break. We're going to be coming back with our next topic, which is going to be even more interesting, I think, proselytization, Freedom of expression? What do you think it is? You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. First Lieutenant James Fleming's Huey Slick was being raked by North Vietnamese fire, but he persisted in the rescue mission. Details after this.
You have your boots on, you're wet, you're cold. You feel like it's the land of time for God. Drill instructors all over the place, they're like lying. And you ask yourself, my God, what did I get myself into? Your body's screaming, but your mind and your heart tells you, keep on going. Don't give up. You question yourself, do I have what it takes to become a United States Marine? In the back of my mind, I knew I was not going to quit on myself. And when you stand there on the parade deck, and that drill instructor comes in front of you, the one that made you better, holds out his hand, shakes your hand, and they call you brother, call you Marine, you break down in tears.
Private Ramon Hernandez became a United States Marine. Can you? Call 1-800-MARINES. Maybe you could be one of the few and the proud.
Fleming's five-ship Green Hornet flight heard over the radio that the Special Forces Patrol it had inserted earlier was being overrun by the North Vietnamese. They went back to get them. They found the patrol surrounded on three sides and retreating to a river. One of the gunships went down and one of the Slicks rescued them and returned to base, accompanied by another Slick low on fuel. Fleming descended into a clearing. The North Vietnamese gunners began to rake his chopper with heavy machine gun fire. The patrol could not reach them and returned to the river. Fleming rose, turned the chopper around so his door gunner could fire on the enemy, then hovered to allow the patrol to board. The team leader, who had been separated from the patrol, jumped in the river and swam toward the chopper. He grabbed a rope ladder, and Fleming took off with him dangling in the air and managed to get him back to the base safely. He was awarded the Medal of Honor by President Nixon on May 14, 1970. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
For the past 100 years, Amish furniture craftsmen have placed great value upon the beauty and quality of their work, with great attention paid to the details of the wood. Each board is then hand-selected to match the specific furniture in mind and in achieving the desired look of the finished piece. At Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor Showroom, you will find displays of this fine craftsmanship that you can afford and own. Now is the time. You can visit Naked Furniture at 3570 Washtenaw Avenue and experience this fine quality for yourself. The furniture consultants at Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor are there to show you the fine details of Amish furniture. See for yourself the fine quality Amish furniture. Go to Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor, 3570 Washtenaw Avenue, or visit their website, nakedfurnitureofannarbor.com.
We want to thank Willie Nelson for stopping by our studio and singing with us.
Yeah.
Shirley. Thank you, Willie. We'll see you again. Thank you. You're back. We're listening to, you're on Veterans Radio here.
He had trouble finding a place, too.
Yeah. Well, he's going to be here sometime in next month, I think.
You know what? Let's see if we can get him on the program. But
there you go. He's an Air Force guy.
Is he?
He's an Air Force veteran, yes.
Ooh, okay.
I think from the 50s or something like that. I don't know how old he is, really. But, yeah, he's an Air Force veteran.
Okay. Ooh, that would be cool.
Yeah, it would be. We'll have to work on that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we're back here on Veterans Radio, and we want you to get in on the conversation, especially during this segment. So give us a call here at Veterans Radio at 877-573-7825. 877-573-7825. Our next guest on the program is Colonel Robert Certain. And Colonel Certain is the executive director of the Military Chaplains Association, and I'll let him tell us a little bit more about that when I bring him on. But the reason that I asked him to come on is that I started getting some emails last week about freedom of religion, freedom of religious expression, and that the military is having some difficulty in deciding what is talking about religion and what is proselytizing. We were talking, where'd that word come from? I don't know. But, you know, trying to convince people that they need to convert to whatever religion that you happen to believe in, and that there are some issues in the military with that. So joining us on the phone right now is Colonel Robert Certain. And Colonel Certain, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, and good morning.
Good morning to you. And where are you? Where are we talking to you from?
I'm in Atlanta, Georgia.
Atlanta, Georgia. Okay. So you're a colonel. What branch of the service were you in, sir, or are you still active?
Oh, no, I was Air Force. I retired in 1999.
Well, the reason that, and maybe you've I've already talked to some people about this, is that I got an article from the Tennessean, a newspaper out of Nashville, I believe it is, and it says that a Pentagon ban on proselytizing has left some conservative activists fearful that Christian soldiers and even military chaplains could face court-martial for sharing their faith. I'm hoping that's an exaggeration.
Okay. I would think so. I have the statement in front of the DOD statement okay. in front of me, and there's nothing that I can see that makes that threat. The idea that threat is there is an exaggeration, and taking an admonishment to a level that is, in my opinion, not in the DOD's guidance.
Have you ever heard of or did you experience any problems with this, you know, pushing one religion over another, or you had to belong to one particular faith in order to be successful in the military?
Not me, but but it has happened, and one of the more difficult places where it happened was the Air Force Academy in the early 2000s. When students were trying to convert their classmates from one denomination of Christianity to another, or from Judaism into their denomination of Christianity. And that was an unfortunate situation, but, you know, it's college students, 19 years old, 20 years old, 18 years old, who come in pretty excited about themselves and who... Because of their age and their personality, are likely to try to convince other people of the correctness of their own position.
So you don't feel that something like this is really a problem in the military?
No. And the guidance that the DOD issued was the basic same guidance that I knew about and when I first came in the Air Force in 1969 and. When I shifted from the line of the Air Force to the chaplaincy in 1976, it was the same guidance. And so as far as I can tell, nothing much has changed.
Can you
except the sensitivity of people to religious diversity in this country and the multiplicity of not only Christian denominations but of all kinds of faith groups that were not represented in the military in previous decades.
That's a nice way of putting it, is that we've got so many diverse branches, I guess you could say, of various faiths and denominations and so forth, that, as Bob and I were talking about earlier, you know, we just need to learn how to compromise a little bit and just accept other people's beliefs. I mean, what do they...
What did Rodney King say, Dale?
Oh, we just have to learn how to get along.
Let's just all get along. Excuse
me. Well, it's more than that. The chaplaincy in its current makeup and since World War II, well, actually since World War I, has been charged with ensuring the First Amendment rights of all military members. And because we live on the sort of the sword's edge of the First Amendment, then when we say we have to ensure the freedom of religion to all members, that's all members. There are no one's excluded from that.
Mm-hmm.
If we begin to exclude, then we fall across onto the other side of the First Amendment, which prohibits establishment Now, both of those prohibitions are related to Congress, according to the Constitution. But at the same time, the importance and one of the big things about the DOD is that we're here to defend the nation, the Constitution of the United States of America. And that Constitution has been pretty clear about welcoming everybody that seeks a home in this nation into the nation to become part of the nation, and when they bring a faith that is not widely practiced, then they bring that faith with them. They're not required by the Constitution to convert to any faith or to no faith. And so the DOD, as I see it, is trying to ensure that the chaplaincy is able to continue to function within the DOD under the same guidelines we've had for decades and decades.
Could you talk just briefly about those guidelines? We're talking with Colonel Robert Certain, who is the executive director of the Military Chaplains Association, and we're just trying to find out what what training the chaplains go through. If you'd like to give us a call, give us that call at 877-573-7825. Okay, 877-573-7825. Could you explain what your mission was when you became a chaplain, or what you were charged with? What are the rules, I guess, of what you can do and what you can't do?
Well, the rules applying to chaplains are double-sided. Anything regarding the practice and teaching of religion for the people who come to me and who worship in services that I led, it's governed by my ecclesiastical authority. For me, it's the Episcopal Church. Mm-hmm. For others, it's the Catholic Church or the Baptist Church or some other, or the one of the Jewish groups or one of the other groups that are represented in the chaplaincy. However, as an officer in the Air Force, I was also charged with, if I could not participate in a liturgy that they wanted, then because of my ecclesiastical requirements, mm-hmm. then I was charged with finding somebody who would. Sometimes mm-hmm. that was another chaplain. For instance, I could not, and at the time, officiate at the weddings of divorced persons who were not Episcopalians, because they required to get permission from their Episcopal bishop. So I would simply call the Methodist or the Baptist chaplain and on the same hall with me and ask them to take it over. If there's somebody outside of my faith community, then as an officer, since they are qualified to use federal property, since they're qualified to have their faith protected, then I am charged with protecting that and providing their services by finding someone who will, even if that means going into the civilian community and bringing somebody onto the base to take care of it.
So it's, you have to live in two worlds that are really, really carefully balanced.
It's sort of like the fiddler on the roof in the play. You have to be very careful about these things. And so that's where we live. And the recent controversies in the last decade or so about proselytization has been addressed in this recent Department of Defense statement on that says service members can share their faith, and they define that as evangelizing, but must not force unwanted, intrusive attempts to convert others of any faith or no faith to one's own beliefs, which they define as proselytization. Abusive and intrusive behavior is something that the Department of Defense has been taking very seriously in recent years, and we hold our military members to a higher standard, I think, than the population at large. So the military's led the way in prohibiting unwanted intrusive behavior in relation to race, color, sex, religion, national origin, age, disability, and in the question of proselytizing within the military.
It just makes sense.
In the civilian community, you can proselytize all you want to.
Right.
Nobody's going to get in your way.
I want to talk about that when we come back. We got to take a break. But when we come back, let's talk a little bit, if we can, about what happens in civilian life versus what happens in the military life. And we do have a questioner on the line. We're going to try and look up that information for you, Gene, real quick. You're listening to Veterans Radio, and we'll be right back after this.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
And welcome back to Veterans Radio. I just want to thank Bob for playing that riff for us. And weren't you in a band?
Yes.
Do you play bass or lead?
I played rhythm.
Rhythm. Okay.
I had rhythm. All paratroopers got rhythm. Yeah.
Isn't that Gershwin something out there? Anyway, we are talking with Colonel Robert Certain of the Military Chaplains Association. And the question is coming back to us is that the fine line that a chaplain or anybody has to tread in the military versus being evangelical versus recruiting. I can't even use the word proselytizing. I'm lucky I can pronounce it. but a serious question is that you mentioned that in a civilian life you can get away with that, but in the military you cannot. Correct.
Correct.
Okay, because I'm wondering, because there are people that would feel pressured, even in the civilian world, and this is something we talked about before the program, about suppose a particular commander was fairly evangelical and said, okay, we're going to have services tonight at 9 o'clock. It would be really good if everybody was there. What does that imply career-wise to somebody in the military and also to somebody who may be working in business?
Well, that's prohibited action in the military.
Oh, okay.
The commander is not allowed to do that because the commander has power over subordinates, and so when I was a young lieutenant, the request of the commander is to be considered an order.
Right. Yes.
And
I understand.
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. That's what we were thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, that's something that might have happened out at the academy a little bit, even though it wasn't their officers that was doing it. It was the cadet commanders that, I guess, were, causing the problems for them, 10 years ago. Kind of that expectation of behavior or expectation of, being part of the team.
There is that. And the officers are expected to be wiser than 18-year-olds. And are expected to counsel, advise, and otherwise direct their young cadets to recognize the limits of their various expressions.
Well, we've got a call from a listener, and I don't know if you know the answer to this or not. Maybe one of our listeners might. Hold on just a second. Hi, I've got Gene on the line, and Gene, you're welcome to Veterans Radio.
Okay, I don't know whether this is fact or not. It's something I heard last night, and I heard it on a sometimes controversial radio talk show.
Okay. What did you
hear?
Pardon me? What did you hear?
Okay. That in a memorial to these 20-some SEALs that were shot down a couple months after Osama bin Laden was supposedly killed, there was a memorial. And the memorial, I'm not sure if it was a government-sponsored memorial, for lack of a better way of putting it, or whether it was a private memorial. But anyhow, the military supplied a Islamic imam, I think that's how it's pronounced, rather than a chaplain. He spoke in Arabic, not in English. And after it was translated, he was praising Allah. He was calling the SEALs infidels. And this is supposedly on YouTube. It is a memorial. The parents of a SEAL, last name of Vaughn, with the parents being interviewed. And I wonder if anybody has heard anything about this.
Well, we will try to find that out for you, Gene. Thanks for calling in.
Okay.
I want to ask the chaplain, anything. Have you heard anything about this?
No.
Okay.
I hadn't either, Gene. We'll see what we can find out for you and get back to you. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine that. Well, anyway.
We'll have to report on that.
Yeah, we'll put our crack reporter on that, will. Bob. You're the technological genius. Nina will find out for
us. Nina will find out. Maria.
All right. Anyway, back to Colonel Certain. I wanted to inform people and let them go to your website. I think it's really important because you have a big article on there about a story that we've done here on Veterans Radio a couple of times, and in fact just a couple of weeks ago we did a whole program about Father Capon and his Medal of Honor. Did you?
Yes.
And actually, tell me a little bit about your organization. What is it that you do?
Well, the Military Chaplains Association started out as the Army Chaplains Association in 1925. Later became the Army and Navy Chaplains Association, and when the Air Force was born, it was chartered by Congress as the Military Chaplains Association of the USA. That was in 1950. Since that time, we have membership from active duty, former and retired chaplains from the Army, Air Force, Navy, Veterans Affairs, and the Civil Air Patrol. Now, what listeners need to understand is that we don't leave the Marine Corps out. The Navy provides chaplains to the Marine Corps and to the Coast Guard. So we have, now not everybody that's a chaplain is a member of our organization because we are a voluntary nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
But we were chartered as the voice of chaplaincy, and we sit on the military coalition in Washington, Alexandria, to represent military members and veterans and their families to the Congress and to the executive branch of the government. We're part of a joint voice for veterans and military issues.
Colonel Certain, this is Bob Gould. Regarding Father Capon receiving the Medal of Honor, had there been any other chaplains that had received the Medal of Honor?
Well, there were two in Vietnam, and so it's rare because chaplains are rarely on the front lines, but they frequently are. There were chaplains at Gettysburg 150 mm-hmm. years ago, and one was killed in action and. One followed his troops into the battle on the third day. So we've been around for a while, and starting with George Washington's army during the American Revolution.
Well, I know that there are many, many veterans out there that certainly have appreciated what the chaplains did for them on active duty, and my guess is that your organization can probably help other veterans' organizations when they are looking for chaplains to help out or to talk to their groups. Do you do that?
Exactly, we do. And we are right now restructuring our organization to be a bit more responsive by establishing what the military would call a recall roster in as many states as we can, so that when somebody needs a chaplain, for instance, for a veteran's funeral, mm-hmm. and the active duty chaplains are unable to respond because of other duties, that the veteran chaplain will be available to provide services for that family. We also are responding to active duty chaplains who are requesting that somebody meet a warrior home on emergency leave, meet mm-hmm. them at the airport, make sure that they're properly cared for in accordance with that warrior's needs and that warrior's family's needs. We speak to service groups, veteran service organizations, civic organizations. We seek to train congregations to understand the virtues and values of military service and the skills that veterans bring to the congregations when they come home. Also to be aware of the various kinds of pastoral and economic needs that families experience during the enforced family separation. When the military member is deployed downrange, and particularly with the National Guard and the Reserves, their families are in counties and towns all over America. They're not located on military installations, and so they don't have that infrastructure to surround them. And so we're working with those congregations mm-hmm. who are asking us to tell them. To try to teach them what they can do to care for the families of those who are deployed.
I think it sounds like a great organization. It certainly is worthwhile because it's sort of like a Marine. I know that there are no former Marines. I don't think there are any former chaplains. My father-in-law was a minister, and even after he retired, he didn't stop ministering. you guys keep on going.
Well, it's and veterans really never completely shed their uniforms.
No, that's very true. We don't. Sometimes we put them away for a number of years, and then we bring them out later on when we need to.
Well, and even when you can't see the uniform, it's sort of embedded in our DNA, if you will.
That's very true. So if people wanted to get some more information about you, where would they go?
They'll go to our website, www.mca, for Military Chaplains Association, mca-usa.org.
Okay. I encourage them to do that. Thank you, Colonel Robert Certain, for being on Veterans Radio. I look forward to having you on the program again in the future.
Okay. You know how to find me.
I do now. Thank you very much, sir.
All right. Good day.
All righty. Well, we got about 30 seconds. Coming up next week, we're going to be talking with an American POW from Vietnam, Jerry Coffey. Finally, we got that all cooked up. Dwight Zimmerman will be on the following week with some amazing authors, and I can't remember the name off the top of my head. Then we got a World War I story in June. We got women in the military coming up.
Lots of things. Dr. Grant.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Air Force.
All right. So until next week, thank you very much. You are dismissed.
All views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.